Welcome back, everybody, to another really quick turnaround episode of the Be Better podcast. We are coming here with our probationary co-host, Devin Palmer, is not with us today. He's on injured reserve. Apparently, his youngest son was kicked out of daycare for fighting. No, I don't think Frankie was fighting. But Devin's not here today, so I swung deep for the fences, and I got a great co-host for today, friend of mine for a long time, client, and a just recent. The VinFast Ironman World Championship finisher, Micah Nordby. Micah, welcome to the Be Better podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Oh, hey, so good to hear you. So what you don't have is you don't have soda in your lap, which is normally what Devin has for a sidekick. But you are on the super, super sweet couch here in the Final K Global World headquarters on the 75th floor. So the elevator ride was okay.
It was okay. It was a lot of steps coming up here.
Yeah.
You know.
Valet.
Couple days out of an Ironman, the legs aren't really moving that fast, but.
What?
If maybe we could turn that into like get an elevator in the headquarters.
An escalator maybe too.
An escalator, yeah.
Or the escalator is down for service. We're sorry for that. And the valet service will be better outside next time.
That's right. I just had to take a breather halfway up, so we're good.
You're like Bentor. Yeah. We are less than a week out from race. Do you still have the vibes? Do you still feel it?
I don't know. I was thinking about that as I was driving over here. It's like one minute, yes, and then the next minute you're like, what am I supposed to do with my life now? It's like kind of a confusing, like excited, but then like, I don't know, kind of missing training, which is weird because I feel like 7 days ago I was like, couldn't wait to get done training and get out there and get the race going. And now it's like, I kind of miss it. And it's only a couple days out. So
you are kind of in the beginnings of what we call Ironman blues.
I am.
Which is,
it's a real thing.
It is. It is. So, I mean, you obviously, this is not your first race.
No.
This was your 13th Ironman finish that you have.
Yes.
Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
Golf clap. after you're looking way back to your first one, and finishing that one, is there some similarity there? Because this is really this was a big life goal for you to race the world championships in Kona. In racing your first Ironman and racing this, are there some similarities in how you feel afterwards?
Yeah, it's funny you asked that. I was actually just thinking about that. I feel like racing Kona brought me back to like my first Ironman. Like everything felt new again and exciting again. And, you know, I think back to my last, you know, the 12th or maybe even 11th, 10th, those Ironmans, they kind of, I got to a point, I think, where it was kind of going through the motions. And I never got like that excitement after, you know, or on the start line of an Ironman in the excitement afterwards. And it was almost like, you finish an Ironman and you're like, oh, I never want to do that again, you know?
Yep.
And I feel like going into Kona was like, kind of went in with a mindset of like everything was new again. Like everyone talks about Kona and how hard the course is. So I was nervous about that and how that was going to compare to all the other, you know, Ironmans that I did. But I think coming out of Kona, it's like the first time in a long time I've actually like wanted to go back and do it again. And it's like, when can I sign up and how can I like get back there again? I want to race there again. And going into Kona, that wasn't the plan.
Yeah, I know.
It's like,
you're like, okay, we're done after this.
Yeah, this was the grand finale. And I feel like Kona kind of sparked like my drive again in the sport, which is weird.
To do Ironman, or do you think it are the other, because coming to this day, we actually took a journey where we visited almost every other distance world championship from sprint, Olympic to, you know, 70.3. So you kind of made this like world championship world tour. Do the other ones, did they spark that same feeling, or is this?
No, this is new. So
okay.
I'm not sure if I'm still in like the excitement phase or what's going on, but I feel like it almost feels like this was my first one, like all over again. And now you kind of take parts of the race that when you start thinking about it and you start going through your race and the kind of the day that I had and the goals that I had going in, there was some areas where I feel like now, you know, analyzing that I kind of missed the bar of what I wanted to do. So it's like, oh, you know, you're happy on one end that I accomplished a goal that I've set and I've worked for, you know, 15 plus years. But on the other hand, there's like a couple things that were on my list of things to tick off that I didn't tick off. So it's like, you know?
So before we go into that, did the race live up to the hype?
Because
you had talked about there was a lot of things that everybody says, oh, this, that, and the other thing. Did it live up to the hype? Did it, was it close?
I think yes, it lived up to the hype as far as like the excitement and like everything with the day and the week that leading up to all the things, you know, just the mood and the excitement and just like the general, basically being in Kona and those feels and being on the course that I never thought I was going to ever race on. And then, you know, training on it and racing on it, it was all kind of like, I don't know, I was like living in a little bit of a dream while I was out there, just trying to take in everything that I possibly could.
Yep.
You know, knowing that I very well might not be back there.
Now, you were racing not alone at the race. And I don't mean like, you know, with other athletes, but there was somebody that was kind of in your head, in your heart, that brought you to this race, and that you were, I think it could be said you raced for this person. Because they couldn't. You want to tell us a little bit about who that was and kind of what that meant to you?
Yeah, for sure. So I got into Ironman way back after college, kind of a transition period in my life of coming out of a collegiate sport, again, not knowing what to do with all this extra time that I had had. So that's why I found Ironman, and it was a space for me to kind of be within myself and train long hours out by myself. It was kind of therapeutic for me at the time, and it's what I needed. During that time, I also crossed paths with a lady from my hometown who was doing, she'd just gotten into the Ironman scene, and she kind of talked about it, and, you know, once she figured out that I had signed up for this Ironman thing, she was like, oh my gosh, that's the same thing I, you know, same one I did, and she was super pumped for me, and probably one of my biggest advocates at the time, because my parents were like, no, you're not signing up for this triathlon thing. Like, you're graduating from school. You don't have a job.
Yep.
You're not doing this. So she kind of pulled my parents around and really got behind me and really helped me out for my first race. She had flown down to Madison to show me the ropes, was at the race. And before the night before the race, I guess back in the day, you had to sign up for Ironman if you wanted to do it. The next year, athletes got to sign up the day before they did the race. So she drug me down there, and she's like, she had this big, you know, idea that like she had been training with me, and she's like, you know, you can qualify for Kona. And I was like, I don't even know what Kona is, but sure, sounds good. And so she was like all excited, and she's like, you're going to qualify tomorrow. Like, we're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And so she's like, and then I'm going to qualify the next year, and like, we're going to go to Kona together. And I was like, all right, cool. Sounds good. I'm not doing another one. And so she talked me into it. So we actually signed up for my second one before that I did my first one.
So you signed up before you even like towed the line.
Yeah. For and your my second parents, one. my mom had to hide it from my mom. Like, Connie had to like lie to my mom as to where we were going. Cause if they found out that I signed up for a second one, right after, you know, right before doing this first one, they would have killed me. I even had to like borrow money at the time to do it and like take out a loan. So, fast forward. So we, you know, I didn't qualify for Kona that year. I ended up taking second in my age group. Only one girl went. So we both were registered for the next year, and we trained, you know, all year and kind of checked in with each other. And as time went on, we were about 3 weeks out from the race. And she was going to come down to Madison and train with me those last 2 weeks. So we were kind of getting through that point. And I remember getting off of a ride.
It's okay.
It's going to be kind of hard.
Yeah. Take your time.
I got in from a ride. And it was the last long ride that we had both were kind of doing at the same time. And I had a phone call from my dad that said, you know, there was an accident, and basically kind of went through everything, and Connie was hit by a truck and ended up being killed on the spot. So that kind of shifted things for me at the time, and I kind of shut down training and went home and did all of that stuff with my family, and we all decided to continue to do the race. So I had to kind of shift gears really quickly and get mentally prepared and ready for this race that was happening in a week. And I did, and a bunch of people came down and supported me from my hometown, and it was great, and it was an emotional day, and I ended up doing the same thing as the year prior, taking second. So I didn't get that Kona slot. And then time went on. So I made a vow at that time, you know, that I was going to fulfill this dream of Kona for not only myself, but for Connie. And that's been kind of one of my driving forces kind of ever since. So
kind of getting you there.
Yeah. So she's kind of been a motivating factor for me, you know, all these years. Obviously, it was a goal, you know, for myself, but there's that extra kind of burning push inside of you to do this for someone, you know, other than yourself. So it was neat, actually. And when we got to Kona, I didn't know this, but Connie's family had actually bought tickets to come down. So as I was, you know, landed at the airport, I saw Connie's daughter and Connie's mom come walking through the crowd at the airport. And I was like, what in the world?
We just happened to be vacationing here. Whoa. Yeah.
So it was like crying all over again. And so that meant the world to me that they came down there and were there supporting me that day. So.
That was great. Yeah. Getting Granny around in a wheelchair on race day around up and down Palani was quite the fun thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how that happened, I guess. That was all behind the scenes. But every time, you know, I turned the corner on the run course, they were there. So it was fun. It was an emotional day. Having that, I actually had her race bib from the race that she didn't get to do back in Madison with me through the day. And Cole and I had it pinned to the other side of my race bib. So I got to pull that out at the finish line and get some pictures of, you know, her bib going down the finish chute for her family. And so,
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You know, I think with triathlon, there's so many ways to make it more about something else than just yourself. And that story, I think, resonates probably with more people than you probably understand, you know, and the memory of her and Connie being with you, and you put her initials were on your jersey. You had a whole custom kit that you made up that was like, we got a lot of comments, you know, about the, like, especially like, you know, the stars and stripes. We're not going to acknowledge the Bucky stripes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was Bucky bibs in the front, Bucky USA bibs in the back.
Yeah, we'll keep with that story on that. But you had her initials on your shoulder, and that was like, you know, where you put your hand over your heart when you say the pledge. And that is really, I think, that's very telling. The fact that you carried her with you, that her family was there, that's incredibly special. So that had to make this event even more meaningful, I can imagine.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely a very emotional week leading up. And then, of course, when her family showed up, and then just throughout the day itself, I think that on top of just for me personally being there was, I feel like, just a emotional like roller coaster of a time, but I enjoyed every single second of it. So.
That's awesome. Well, to give you guys a little bit of background about like what we did for this, because when I went to my level 3 certification, I used you as like my thesis project. Like we had to talk about an athlete that we did something different. We kind of went outside the box and we customized something and created a program to elicit, you know, a different physiological reaction from somebody. So I tell the story about 5 years ago, you came to my house and had reached out and you came over to my deck and I pitched you on a plan.
Yeah. And that was like the peak of my burnout. Like I was ready to like put the bike on Craigslist and be out of here.
Yeah.
So.
You were ready to clock out. And I kind of like stepped in and tossed out a Hail Mary. And what we did was, and I don't know how it kind of resonated, but the idea was that you had kind of you had done the same thing for a period of time, and we had not really achieved that goal. So we went back and I said, let's not do Ironman for a couple of years and let's do sprints, and then we'll do Olympics the next year, and the next year we'll do 70.3s, and then COVID hit and that kind of threw everything for a weird loop. But I remember you saying, well, I'm not a fast person. And then the next year,
still
you,
not.
Oh, hey, so you won a sprint race outright, like overall, like when trying on, and that's not a, like, that's not a scrub race either. Right. So I remember like just kind of seeing you hit some of those like plateaus where doing things that you never thought you could do maybe, or didn't know that you were inside of you. And I'd always said that all of this was always inside of you. It would just needed a pathway to get out. And that kind of, I would say that program and that like commitment that made like that, that kind of glued me to you in a way that doesn't normally happen. And really I've never gone outside the box that far to create something that unique in somebody. And even in the fact where last year for your qualifications going into that race in Arizona, we didn't really do any traditional long runs, you know, if you think about that.
And that was a high stress point of mine going into Kona, I think, because
we kind of did
the same thing.
Exactly. And I think I pointed out, or I tried to, in a way to kind of like ease the anxiety, was pointed out what we did was what success was. And because I think athletes a lot of times have this, especially now in the days of social media and where you have things that are kind of preconceived, baked in. This could be for marathon or whatever it is that if you don't go to this historical progression, you're not going to be able to do it. I mean, you could walk. I know you could do a walk-off Ironman at any point in time. The distance is just there. That's inside you. But being able to do it, number one, without breaking you getting there and allowing you to feel like you are fresh and ready. And I'd always believe that the key to doing fast Ironmans is speed. You know, it's not the old long distance, long, slow distance idea. And the fact that it like 100%, like you took that and you ran with it and you made it work. That says so much right there. But 5 years of working and to make it happen, that was so cool. It was such a time. And you know, I don't know. I'd love to see you do it again. Well, is there anything that you would like to say out loud? Like, because I know there's some things probably you want to keep to yourself, but like, what would you do differently, or what might you do different in the race that you maybe thought you didn't get a chance to do this time? Underpants run.
I'm gonna hard pass again on that. I didn't train for the underpants run, so we skip that. I think when looking back at my race, I feel like a big objective I think of ours, that what we wanted to do was to have a consistent race.
Yep.
And so that was one of the big focuses on, well, how can I do that? I've always kind of just went out, you know, and swam okay, bike the heck out of a bike, and then walk the run. I mean, that's kind of been my MO since I started, and I've been trying to break that, you know, over and over and over again. And I feel like I had a consistent day at Kona. I think from the start, I felt like each distance I wanted to kind of start at a manageable pace and just kind of get faster over the time, so mm-hmm. I wasn't ever slowing down. And I felt like I did that well during the swim and the bike. And then, I don't know if it was just a day or if it was, I don't know. I just feel like the run, I wasn't mentally kind of in a space to go deep and dig, which is where I need to be to get through the marathon. So that's kind of an area of, I'm like, oh, I wish I could go back and start that run over.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
you looked good at every point. For everybody out there, Soda has now found her
Soda
way
has
in
entered
and
the scene.
And licking Micah all over. So it's like, oh, we got a new guest host here. Oh, one that's way better than the last one. you coming out of the water, smiles, and people have asked me like, what's your metric of success here? And I said, I want to see you happy. I want to see you excited. You know, at no point in time do I want to see like a grimace or a moan or like, geez, what am I doing here? And you came out like 110, like that was a good swim, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I felt good. And I think one of the other things too is I never really had like a time on the day. So like I didn't really, you know, usually I have like my watch on me and you just time it to swim, then you hit the lap button for the transition, you hit the lap button on the bike, T2 and the run, and you kind of know where you're at for the day. And I just didn't, I didn't have any of that. I didn't want to race with like a time goal at all, so I didn't really keep track of any of that, which I feel like when I started the run, like I had set myself up to have a pretty decent time at Kona for me, and I didn't really know that. And so I wish I would have, that'd be like one thing to go back. I wish I would have like kept a running time, and I feel like I could have.
We can always look that up. You PR'd at Ironman in Kona.
Well, in Kona, yeah, I suppose. My first time. That's always a PR.
Yeah, so the next time's going through. Let's talk a little bit about like your inside kind of observations of the first time that we've had a true all-women's championship. And, you know, we had more women racing this year. There was a lot of, there's some haters out there that were throwing some venom out about like what this was doing to the sport and maybe how it was marginalizing it. But when it push comes to shove, this is the very first year in Ironman Kona, not one person was DNF'd on the swim from a time standpoint. First year that that's ever happened. Every person made it. And there was 97% of the athletes that towed the line crossed the finish line, which is also a historical barrier that has never happened. And I think for anybody that says, you know, this is, we let a bunch of people in that didn't need to be in here or shouldn't have been in here, to see that, to see those numbers reflect, well, they did. They deserve to be there, and they actually did better than a lot of other people have. Number one, I think that is that's a vindication in and of itself. But for you, did you feel that? Was there a sense of it as being a female athlete that it was like, this is our time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, there was a lot of chatter on social media leading into, you know, this race on how Ironman was just handing out Kona slots, and Kona wasn't a world championship anymore because, you know, everyone was getting a slot. And I think that kind of weighs on you, like, mentally going in. It's like, well, do I deserve to be here? Am I one of those slots I was just giving out, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, deep down, I knew I did deserve to be there. I came in, you know, missed a Kona slot by one slot many times. So I knew that I was good enough to be there and deserve to be there. But I know a lot of women going in were like, oh, you know, I got a roll down slot, so I'm just, you know, here to fill a spot for the day. Like, I shouldn't be here. And I think there was a lot of negative chatter around that. But based off of, you know, how the day went, I think that women showed up and I think they delivered. And I think that that just goes to show that if they open up some more slots, that the women are going to take them and they're going to do put on a pretty good show. And I think we all delivered on doing that.
I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And it's not only just in the amateur side, which we saw, you know, some great races there, some really great racing, but also on the professional side. We saw the same race that you would have seen in a normal year where you were watching the men. You saw an amazing swim with an amazing bike, and then, like, let's just hold on for the run. And it was a battle. There was a lot of changes that happened in the back end of the field. We were, you know, we're all following Nibsy going in and, like, watching her come out of the water seventh and move her way up to second on the bike, hold second on the run, and then get chewed up, you know, on the run and fall back to fourth. You saw Ann Haig work her way back and run that magic that you knew she always had. You know, watching the perennial bridesmaid, you know, Sir Charles Barkley, Lucy Charles Barkley, by the way, you know, hold it all the way through and live that dream. Those are amazing stories inside there. But also, like, the other, you know, the other thousands of untold stories that were there and how they were able to expand the pier. I thought that was a really interesting and provocative way to be able to do that, to bring the pros out, in front of the King K Hotel. So they're kind of out in the chute. I thought that was a great way to expand it. And especially when they were looking at a historical footprint where they can only have so many people there. Mm-hmm. But from an outside perspective, and for somebody who's been there in other years, I thought it felt the same. I thought the hype was still the same. I thought, you know, as the vendors were still there, the spectators were still there, the town came out. it was still like on the run course. It was like those aid stations were still the vibe.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and you guys had a beautiful day.
Yeah, we did. I feel like we were so fortunate in the day. I felt like it wasn't, I mean, there was never a point in time when the race when I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die of heat stroke. It's so hot. It's so hot. Like there was one point on the bike. I told you about that last little climb before you come and turn back in on the Queen K Highway where I felt like my skin was on fire. It was so hot and there was no wind and it was just like you're just baking going 6 miles an hour up a hill. But other than that, I mean, I felt like we got like a perfect day.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't a lot of overcast there, but the wind was light and in the correct directions. The seas were pretty calm. There wasn't a lot of swells there. And once that sun went down, it kind of made the run almost enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. I was like, when I got into the energy lab, I was like, you know, of course it's always on your mind as you're running out. Like, don't go out too hot. Like, this is the easy part. Like, you got the, you know, Queen K Highway and then the energy lab and then a long run back into town. And so I was kind of a little skeptical about it. I was nervous about it and hoping to get through it. And when I got there, I was like, oh, this is like the, I thought the energy lab was the best part of the race. I was like, it's a tiny chunk. It's like 4.5 miles and it's like easy. You know, the sun was going down, so it wasn't hot, too hot for me when I went in. And I thought it was great. I mean, that was my favorite part of the run section was that little out and back into the energy lab. And then I felt at the Queen K Highway going back was like the never ending, like death march of doom. But
well, and you know, there's a couple things about the energy lab is it is they don't allow spectators in there. They're not supposed to. So it's when you're doing long races, sometimes it can be, you know, just a constant barrage. Like doing Madison, you know, doing Madison's like getting yelled at for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because there's just like people are just in your ear screaming, right? And the energy lab is like a time when it's like, okay, it's kind of quiet. You got the ocean there. It's a little introspective. Kind of you can have your own thoughts there. And then you get back out in the, you know, out in the highway. And then it's, you know, then you got people, you know, cheering for you coming out of it and all along the way. But what were your thoughts about the other racers as you were going back into town that were just starting out on the run?
Oh, I mean, well, it was interesting. So coming back, like it gets dark fast. And I was about 3 miles probably out when it was like pitch black out and there's no lights on the highway. And so I was just like hoping to God I didn't hit a cone because I know that run course was lined with cones coming out. So I was like, they got to be lined with cones going back in. But, you know, there are some people like every now and then I'd see a headlight, you know, running towards me and I'd be like, oh, man, like. People are, they got a long ways to go still. And then turning the corner and going down Polani, and there's some people coming up the hill. Even people going up the hill to start the run as I was walking to my car afterwards. And I was just thinking in my head, like, oh my God. But they made it.
Yeah.
I think the one girl that we cheered on going up Polani as we were walking to our car at the end of the night, I think she was the last finisher to finish. So she made it.
It's so true because there's like, you know, it goes until midnight. And it's a long day, but just thinking about how long a day that is,
yeah,
because it just compounds. And I wonder if running the marathon in the dark, you know, it's easier probably from a heat standpoint, but running in the dark is kind of sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. There's never like a point. I feel like when I think back, and although there's lots of gaps that I don't remember throughout like the marathon, but I feel like the whole, you know, Queen K out, especially when I got to the energy lab, is when I feel like I finally like kind of got into myself and into my rhythm where I felt like good. And I felt like I was, you know, starting to think about like, oh, think about my form and do this and that. Whereas I feel like running beginning of the run, there was so many people and it's easy to get caught up in like what's going on around you and not really focusing in on like yourself and, you know, hitting those little mile markers like you want. And
yeah,
there was just like, I think there was just like too much going on to like manage my own thoughts and like stay within my own self to really like hit the run how I wanted to hit. Whereas when I got to the energy lab, it's quiet. Everyone's kind of struggling and you just kind of put your head down and just kind of start
and go
getting into your rhythm. And so I don't feel like I really got into the rhythm of my run until I got to the energy lab. And then it started to kind of all click a little better. And then coming back in the dark, I kind of like running in the dark. So,
yeah, I mean, if the not knowing where your footing is, that can be a little disconcerting, but it can be comfortable. And again, it's like it tunes a lot of things out, which are, you know, like you said, for the beginning of your run can be real huge distractors. And you start to get just, you turn internal. And that's when you can start to say, okay, what's going on here? And you can kind of breathe it in, see some stars. Those are kind of some big things. Did you get to see anything during the race that, like, I talk a lot about, like, you know, kind of not just taking in the numbers, but taking in the experience. Was there any points in the race that you kind of saw that were unique? Like, did you see a turtle when you were swimming? Did you, like, almost, did you, you know, baw at some goats?
I didn't open my eyes in the water. I didn't want to see a shark. So, no, I took in some moments, you know, like you said, at the beginning of the swim, it took some time to just kind of turn around and look at the shoreline and look at everything that was going around. I knew a couple of the girls in my age group that I had been on a couple previous teams with. So there was four of us that were kind of started the swim together, and we kind of swam the same time. We were right around each other all day. So we all, you know, we're chit-chatting before and kind of taking it all in. And I think, so that was one part. And then I think, you know, on the bike, you have lots of time to think. And one of the coolest parts, I think, was when we were climbing up to Javi, and now you're going to see the pros coming back at you. So you see the big, you know, the lead car, and then everyone's like taking bets as to who's going to be the first biker, you know, who's going to be second. So that was fun. I think the mood of the race, I feel like, was a lot more relaxed than other Ironmans. You know, everyone was very encouraging out on the course and excited, and there wasn't a lot of, like, aggressiveness. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but yep. I just felt like the whole day you were out there and you had a bunch of support even when there was no one around.
Do you think part of that comes from being an all-women's race?
I think that, and I think, you know, majority of us are just there to have, you know, a good time and put together, you know, a good day and to experience it. There's like 1% of us are actually racing to be a world champion. So
yeah,
I think putting that into perspective took out a lot of personalities where,
yep,
you know, I think once you get into the red zone where you're like, you know, an Ironman that I was like trying to get to Kona, I was definitely like way more in the hurt zone and like having the grumpets than I felt like I was at Kona, where on, you know, one hand, that's great because you enjoy the day. And like I enjoyed that entire Ironman, which I don't think other than my very first one, I could say that about.
Yeah.
Whereas it leaves that little kind of bit of burning desire where it's like, oh, could I have gone harder? Should I have like worked harder and gone like deeper during that race? But then it's like, for what?
Yeah,
you know.
And we had talked about how you weren't just mailing it in, because a lot of people have a perspective, well, you made it here, so now it's just kind of like the victory lap, right? You wanted to feel like you gave your best day. You wanted to feel like you gave a strong day out there, and that was an important thing for you going in. And so do you feel like that was you gave a strong day?
I thought at the time that I was, but I think looking back now, I probably could have given more. But it's hard going to those places when...
Where would you give it more?
The run, I think.
Okay.
I think it was hard for me to get, like I said, to get into the rhythm of things in the run. And I have to be in the rhythm to have a good run. And so I think with... You know, I was always kind of off with, I planned to do like a walk run like we had talked about, right? So run 3 minutes, walk 30 seconds on repeat all day. Like, that's just it. That's what I used to hit my run in Arizona, and it just worked for me. But when you throw in Kona and the heat and the aid stations, and I feel like I never quite hit an aid station when I needed to. So that was another walk break. And then it just turned into, I couldn't hit that rhythm that I needed to hit. So my miles were slower than he needed to be. And then before you know it, you're through town and all the excitement, and then you're out on the Queen K, and then same thing. And I felt like the day went so fast.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have a chance during the run to like settle down, get in my head, get in my pace, get in my rhythm. and then go.
Yeah. Did it hurt or help to have Harry and Lloyd out on the course in their little moped screaming at you?
No, obviously support is always helpful. I definitely, you know, I told Courtney, I think prior to the race, like, if you guys aren't at the start of the energy lab, I'm not coming back out of it. So I'll go in, but I'm not coming back out. So that was very well communicated. But yeah, I don't know. I think that it's races where you're kind of in between, like, wanting to enjoy it and then wanting to, like, compete and do well. And you're kind of somewhere in the middle. I feel like that's kind of no man's, like, land. Yeah. I don't think I was fully committed going into racing hard or to having a good day. I was kind of like, oh, I want to have a good day, but I, like, want to go hard, but I'm, like, nervous. Don't know if I can do the distance and all of this. So,
so it does parallel to your first race a lot.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, so would this be Micah 2.0?
Yeah.
Coming back?
Starting all over again.
Doing it again. If that is your choice, I'm 100% on board, obviously, for that. What would it have been meant to you if this year was a France year? Like, you had worked towards that Kona goal, and then it ended up being in France. Would that have?
I would have taken the deferral. 100%.
If they didn't offer the deferral, would it have been? How would you have dealt with that from, like, you know, obviously from a, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, bringing your friends with you, the, you know, kind of racing for Connie, and that's a big piece of it. Would it have been the same?
Man, probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I think now, like, wanting to go back and do Kona again, it's like, all right, well, I have 2 years. You know, you don't really think, like, well, France is next year. Yep. So, you know, if I do an Ironman this year to qualify, I'll be going to France. And it's like, I don't really want to do that. You know, I think everybody wants to race in Kona. And had the women not gotten Kona this year, man, I don't know. I feel like it would have been a massive disappointment to finally qualify after all these years and then be the first year they change it to France. I'd be
somewhere
like,
else.
Oh, man.
Like a head fake. Like, just, oh, my luck. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that didn't happen. And you've raced in Nice before, haven't you?
I did. I raced 70.3 Worlds when it was there.
What was your take on that? How was it?
Man, I think that course was just so difficult for me. With the climb on the bike, so it was a super hard bike.
Mm-hmm.
And the run was a flat, like, I want to say, was it a double or a triple out and back at the time?
Yeah, it's double because it's a four lapper for the Ironman.
Yeah,
distance.
And it was just like a long double lap flat run is never good for me because all the rabbits are even faster on that day, and they pass me like turtle on Daytona Speedway. So,
how about the difference in, like, road style from the United States to Europe, with, you know, being tighter roads, you know, smaller corners, steeper descents? Did that weigh in on or that did that impact you, and would that change some of the things that you would want to do? I mean, I know as a coach, those would the difference in the course obviously would change how we would prepare for it and what we would do to prepare for it. But
yeah, I mean, I think we chose to use a road bike, believe, that year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I just remember on the bike, I mean, I don't think I got a third of my nutrition in that I was supposed to. I didn't have I went with a road bike, so I didn't really have a between the arms bottle. So anytime I needed nutrition, I had to, like, come up and grab a bottle of some sort. So when we were descending, I mean, I was pretty much white knuckled holding onto my bike as hard as I could. And yeah, those roads are narrow and, like, the switchbacks, and I mean, I wasn't used to riding. I rode them 2 days prior. We came down the descent and we rode it just so we had an idea of what it was going to be like. But I think that was the main thing for me, is I finished the bike and I was like, oh my God, I probably took in 200 calories that whole ride, which is not nearly enough.
No.
Which was very different in Kona. I mean, I had my bike nutrition was probably the most dialed if there was one thing I was going to do that day, I was going to hit my nutrition for the first time ever. And I did. Yeah. So I think that's why I felt so good, like, all day. And even afterwards, like, I feel like I didn't even do an Ironman, you know, a couple days ago, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sore for maybe a day and a half. And then, like, the desire to want to do one is already here, which has never happened before. So it's weird. I don't know if it was a combination of, like, just being prepared, hitting my nutrition, like, being consistent, not, you know, going out and blowing up type of thing.
Yeah.
Or what it is, but...
You had that whole nutrition system mapped out. Like, yeah. For those that didn't get the chance to see.
I couldn't fail it. I had the pictures and everything.
Yeah, she had physical pictures and graphs, and everything was taped all over the bike.
Basically a punch in the face every time I needed to take something. So
you had, like, a 14-sheet, you know, like, keynote speech there in front of you that was, like, flipping notes. Okay, you're going to do, and here's what it's going to be. And it worked, though, right? It's like, if it works, it works. And why? I mean... You can laugh about it, but finding the proper nutrition, number one, that fuels you. Number two, that sits inside of you and doesn't want to fight its way out. Those are big, big hurdles that a lot of people never Yeah, people never overcome. And so what did you do different this year that worked for you?
I just went to I had one bottle of basically, I went just all gel, so all liquid. I didn't have any try to get it down any bars or chews or anything like that. It was just every 20 minutes you're taking a swig of gel, and that's it. And that gel was right in front of my face, and a timer went off every 20 minutes. And that's how I kind of went. And then I broke the bike up kind of into sections. So I knew exactly when that next aid station was going to come. So I knew exactly what I needed to get. And that kind of kept me focused and dialed in, so the bike didn't turn into the never ending pedal to doom up the hill. I always knew when that next aid station was coming, and I was anticipating it and knowing when I needed to grab. And once I'd get kind of rode from aid station to aid station, I even had the mile markers on my bars of to where those aid stations were going to be. So I knew exactly, you know, when to anticipate, and I could know when I could pull over and pump my tire up that way.
Hey, your tire held and was not a leak or a puncture issue. This is to make the record straight here. Mike, we're on a ride at the Javi. She got a little something in the sidewall of her rear tire.
It was a massive piece of glass.
It was not a massive piece. Come on. Let's be honest and fair about this. It was like a sliver of something that came out. So there was a discrepancy in the smoothness of the sidewall. It didn't bulge. It wasn't leaking.
It was a major slice.
It was. Anyways, I said it was going to be fine. You rolled your eyes and had...
Well, listen, I just said, if we have an extra tire, that's perfect. Why would we not just swap it?
Yeah, because it wasn't leaking. It was fine. And, okay, so on the race day... Everything, you know, works out fine until, 30 miles in, you're starting to feel a little...
No, immediately. So, I don't know. Maybe. I don't even want to take credit for this, but there is a small chance that I didn't pump up that back tire enough.
Oh.
Small chance.
Oh.
However, I feel I remember...
Some things are coming to light
now. Yeah. So, as I'm riding, I mean, it was very early on in the race. I think the first turnaround in town before we come back and go up Polani and out on the Queen K, every time I'd stand up to, put a little bit more power into the pedals, it was very bouncy. And I was this is a bouncy ride. And then there was one time I hit one of the little reflectors in the middle of the road that are in the roads, you know? Mm-hmm. And I definitely felt the rim, bottom out on that. And I was like, oh, we're definitely low. So I was like, well, I'm not riding on the rim. So I'm just going to, see how long I can go before it's, a major problem. Because I didn't want to pull over.
Yep.
Well, I got 30 miles, 32 miles in ish, and I was just like, all right, I'm just gonna stop at an aid station and see if they have a pump and just pump it up and see if it holds. And lo and behold, it did. Thank goodness. Otherwise,
so it wasn't a puncture.
I don't know if you would have made it off the island alive.
Well, so, and then, you know, fast forward to seeing you kind of having the first conversation with you on the run. Your words.
I was we need to have a talk.
Exactly. And it's like, you messed up. And I was like, what? You were like, how long were you holding that conversation? How many times did you have that conversation in your head before you got to me? You were like, what am exactly, how am I going to like just yell at him? And what tone of voice am I going to have? What are the points that I'm going to hit while I'm not able to breathe?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was, thank God it held. But yeah, it wasn't a massive issue. I just wanted to pump it up before it became a massive issue because I didn't have a plan B if that thing went flat.
Yeah.
We would have been in trouble. Because I think I had to take my entire derailleur off to get the rear wheel off.
It would have been a nightmare. There's a whole thing. Yeah, your bike is like, you've never had like an easy mechanical bike before.
No.
There's always something. But it's a great ride. I mean, I think you had all the best of all the equipment you could have. You know, you had everything from your head 1080 rear wheel.
I had every single possible speed advantage that I could have purchased.
You had that little carbon wrap over bike. over your derailleur cage. Everything was there. So, it was the only thing you didn't have was a little gecko on your handlebars riding along with you.
That's right. I did not.
Thank goodness. That would have been crazy. You're crazy scared of the geckos, which is weird, but
what do you mean weird? Would you want a gecko dropping on your head and crawling up your body?
I mean geckos are fine. Beetles, no way. Ugh. Spiders, But a gecko is like what's like I said before, what's it gonna do? To try and sell you insurance? It's kinda it's got a nice little British accent. You just kinda hello, I'm just gonna just be right here. I'm just gonna sit on the bars.
I'm good.
All right. Well, maybe next time we'll put a little rubber gecko on your bike and see what happens.
Yeah.
Micah, congratulations.
Thank you. You
were awesome, and I couldn't have been more proud of you. And I've said that 1,000 times if I've said it once, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And just having you kind of relive all this stuff with us today and share this, and so that everybody else can hear, you know, the cool stuff that we get to hear behind the scenes is really special. So thanks for being here, and thanks for being a better co-host than anybody else can be.
Yeah. Do we have a new employee now for the podcast?
Well, it's probationary. Don't put yourself in the same position that the previous person was here, where they started to presume that they were a long term, you know, seat occupier.
Yeah. Well, let's take if Soda votes, I feel like I'm in Devin.
Well, that's because Soda can smell Vincent on you. Yeah. That's why your dog. But don't start being a line stepper, because Devin was a habitual line stepper where he's like pimping his stuff and doing all that thing. So.
Well. No, I know. Thank you for having me on here. I appreciate it. And same goes back to you. I thank you for sticking with me all these years. I know I probably am not the easiest athlete to work with, although I feel like there's got to be some people that are a little more high maintenance than me.
Oh, you're just fine.
I think you managed my pre-race stresses over every tiny intricate thing that could potentially have gone wrong that never would go wrong during a race that I worried about.
Yeah, we've got good communication. That's a big piece of it. You listen to me, I listen to you, and there's a level of mutual respect there that without that it definitely would not have worked. So
that's right.
So when we gun for Kona 2025 and we pick which race we're going to do for that one, as you roll your eyes.
Oh, no, it's crazy. I can't even believe that those words came out of my mouth. It's actually shocking. I think there's a bug in Kona. Did I catch the Kona bug?
Oh, my God. It wasn't COVID either.
My God, now I have to go back, and now I want a podium.
There
What's
we are.
What's it going to take?
I think we got
9 hours and 35 minutes, I can tell you that.
There we go. We got to shave off. Let's just half that run.
Yeah.
Let's just shave half the run. Maybe we just do half the run.
I need to get that bike under 4:30.
Yeah, well, now familiarity will breed speed. So now that you know what it's like.
I seem to drop like 50 pounds. My power to weight ratio will go up drastically. It'll be great.
Pump your bike tires up to the appropriate amount at the beginning of the day.
Don't listen to your coach. Always change and put new tires on before.
Always change. Never, ever listen to what coach says. He's just full of it and doesn't have anything constructive to offer.
He just wanted to sit on the deck and have a beer. He didn't want to change my tire.
That's all I wanted to do. Just have a beer in peace out inside with Diamond Dave. And what would you do? Yeah, my tire. All right. Well, you know, we're gonna say goodbye here. Micah, again, thanks for being up here. Love to have you back any other time to sit and share and help me rip on Devin, should he ever decide to or be allowed to come back here. So
that was good. Thanks.
Yeah. And for all of you out there, thanks for hanging with us. We will be back after a medium hiatus. Probably be a couple weeks before we get back and do another pod. Going on vacation to Ireland with Joe and my old police partner Todd and his wife Jackie. So that should be a lot of fun. So In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the fall. Enjoy the beginning of the NHL season. And in the meantime, in your off season, just be a little better.